Hello, everybody. It's Anthony Bionis from the Mission Start Podcast, and we have another edition of The Aftermath, the podcast where we talk about game reviews on the site, or anime reviews, anything of that nature, and we talk about them in great length. With me today is Chris.
Hello.
And Chris, were two things. To do with the power of Microsoft, he is Skype with me through Xbox One on this podcast, and it's I can see him.
Yeah, that's right. And now I remember the first time that we brought up the Skype chatting, you made a few comments about the camera. From your end, how does it look?
It looks great. I have to say that the camera is fantastic, and Microsoft did not pay me to say that. But the other reason why we have Chris for this podcast today is because he's going to talk about Assassin's Creed 3 and Assassin's Creed 4. And one cannot be about the other. And we feel that we need to talk about Assassin's Creed 3 before we can talk about Assassin's Creed 4. And Chris has recently played them both and finished them. And so with that, I guess we should start. Assassin's Creed 3. That was the game that many people were really excited for when that first trailer hit. It's funny how when it's set in America, it's like, oh my god, best game ever. Ah. It was a game that everybody was really excited for, and it came out, and people did play it, and they loved it, except for the ending. So, from your experience, what were some of the before we even get to the best things, so what story-wise, we should set that up. Story-wise, where does this take place in the Assassin's Creed universe? Who is this new character, and what is going on?
Okay, so in regards to Assassin's Creed 3, at least, for those that haven't played, you play the role of Connor Kenway, or by his Native American name. Unfortunately, I have forgotten which tribe is... much as I hate to say it, but his native name is Ratona Keiton.
Hmm.
And they play when you play the role as Connor, he is actually the first mixed race character that you get to play as he is part Native American and part Englishman.
Hmm. Interesting.
So that was one thing that really drew in a lot of people. And in fact, his cultural identity wasn't even revealed until about a month or two prior to the game's release.
Hmm.
And then when they did that, well, pre-orders sort of skyrocketed a little bit.
Hmm.
But that aside, you play the role of Connor, who happens to have his story set right around the time of the Revolution era of what was known then as the... United Colonies of America, just to give you a better term for it. And it was during this colonial period of time that Connor, he ends up interacting with a series of influential American figures such as Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, and Paul Revere.
Hmm. Interesting.
And over the course of his story, to be honest, the way that his character is designed, he doesn't really care about the Assassin Order that much, at least in the beginning.
Hmm.
And of course, before I get into talking about his Assassin affiliation, I'd also like to point out that in Assassin's Creed 3, the first part of the game was actually dedicated to playing the role of his... of his father, and he actually turns out to be a Templar just a couple sequences in.
I heard that the intro to the game was really good.
Yeah, it was a little on the slow paced side, but it didn't feel unnaturally so.
Mm-hmm.
To give you a better frame of reference, when you start out, you happen to be on you happen to be sailing on a ship. It gives you an idea for what the control for the commands are. You get to understand how they're implementing new features such as little mini games where you can play checkers, and DICE and a couple other games that they have there. And by implementing that, that was actually another feature that they had thrown in for Assassin's Creed 4, because it was met with okay success. It wasn't exactly one of the highest things that the game was lauded for, but from a time standpoint, those activities were pretty popular, you know, for pretty much just anyone at that time period.
Interesting.
And, oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was just saying interesting.
Oh, well, the thing is that I actually look at that as a sign to, you know, sort of give you a break from the main game. If, you know, here you are going after mission after mission after mission. But if you wanted to just have something that's nice and slow-paced and could earn you a little bit of cash, then, you know, they did have that option at your disposal. And in fact, for I believe both games, they did have an achievement where you needed to play and win a round of each of the games that they had there.
Mm-hmm.
And I do need to check the achievements again for Assassin's Creed 4, but I do believe for both of the games, they actually had an achievement set up where you could, you know, get your moment of glory for amassing, you know, a certain like set of thousands of, you know, a thousand of the currency that they had just in those games.
Okay. As far as, I mean, like, each Assassin's Creed game has, you know, always been exactly the same as far as like, how everything works, with the sneak mechanic, as far as, like, going on top of a tall building or tall, object, and you get a good sense of the land and, you know, expanding your map. What was there any new features, say, introduced into the game, or was it the same kind of tropes that previous Assassin's Creed games? It's just another Assassin's Creed game, just with a different storyline.
You know, I actually say that the entire formatting for Assassin's Creed 4, while it does draw from a lot of elements from the prior game, it does have a completely different feel. And in fact, with Assassin's Creed 3 being one of the first few games that actually had a consistent lineage, like directly present in the game,
mm-hmm.
For what was listed in Assassin's Creed 3, where, you know, Connor's father was a Templar and his mother was an assassin, like, those roles were, you know, explicitly designed and expressed in there to, you know, give you a sense that, you know, it's not just one side that has good points, mm-hmm. you know, and that each one does hold a, you know, a valid sense of moral integrity and, proper character design. In Assassin's Creed 4, in this case, the difference between the Templars and the Assassins happens to be focused where the Assassins are, well, for the Assassins that you primarily come across, they're either pirates or they've had some affiliation with what you can consider a bit of a seedy underbelly of society.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Templar Order is primarily fixed within the Royal British Army and the Royal British Navy.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think the thing that I think Assassin's Creed 4, as far as like with the Assassin's Creed games, like it always has this mechanic when it comes to, you know, you are one at a time, like they're coming at you, and you have this kind of this sword style where like you would stand there and you know parry people. It didn't quite make sense in Assassin's Creed 2 through 2 and 3 and in between, but when Black Flag come out with you know pirates, you know that makes sense because we've seen pirates have that same type of style that we've seen in the Assassin's Creed game. Like we can like look at it and it's like, oh, that makes perfect sense in how they do it. They do parry, they do like you know have that stance and then they attack.
Exactly.
Yeah, it totally made sense when they did that. It's like, oh, perfect.
And in fact, they actually did make, since you mentioned the combat system, I'd like to point out that for Assassin's Creed 4, changed that dynamic a little bit in comparison to what was presented in the prior Assassin's Creed 3 game, or sorry, the prior Assassin's Creed games. So with Assassin's Creed 4, one of the things that I noticed that they had newly implemented was with the countering system, and I'm sure that you're well familiar with that. So one of the things I noticed is that I had a couple people that were coming at me at once, and while there was only one notification for the countering where you know, it says, oh yeah, this person is about to attack you, you know, hit counter. Well, what I noticed is that another person was also running up at me at the same time. There was no indication for them. But when I hit counter, not only did I, you know, block the attack of the other person, but I was able to kill them and in one seamless motion, and it gave me a little mini cinematic for it, too. I also ended up incapacitating the other person that was trying to attack me.
Wow.
So I, you know, got to have multi-kills in that respect. But for Assassin's Creed 4, they also even changed the entire layout for the way that the game was designed.
How did it feel like comparing Assassin's Creed 3 to 4?
Honestly, it's Assassin's Creed 3. It felt like it was on the right track, but it just wasn't there yet. Like, and like for example, the sailing system, which I will get into later. The sailing system, it was a newly implemented feature in Assassin's Creed 3. It felt sort of clunky and unrealistic. Whereas for Assassin's Creed 4, the way that the ship is handled, it does have a proper sense of realism. Like, the turns make sense. It seems more fluid. And, but again, I will get into the differences in sailing a little later.
Okay.
But, going back to the combat, Assassin's Creed 4 also implemented the function of using the blowpipe, where you could use either berserk or sleep darts on your opponent. And now what happens is that say if you use a berserk dart on someone, especially helpful against those really heavy enemies, if they're in a crowd, what they'll do is they'll start attacking people. Like how the poison effect from Ezio's little needle gun in Assassin's Creed, I think it was Brotherhood and Revelations.
Right.
But it functions much in that same manner, but it's in a more realistic you know, way that they have that set up. And of course, the sleep darts do put people to sleep, which works great for you know, espionage. And if and while I haven't come across anything that says, you know, present no casualties, if you wanted to go through an area where you have to just sneak around and you didn't want to kill anyone, you could always put them to sleep. From the level one, they'll be out for about 20 seconds. Level two, they'll be out for another 20, and level three, even further to a full minute.
Okay. So there is a there is an option to go full stealth in this game, and does it reward the player better if you go more stealth than you do, say, Swords Ablazing?
Honestly, it really doesn't matter how you play it, aside from, you know, it says, you know, keep a low profile or otherwise you'll be, you know, desynchronized. So, I mean, aside from that, though, you can go on it nice and smooth, darting between, you know, hiding points. Or, you know, you can just go in there. You have your two swords, which in itself was a nice new feature, where instead of just using one weapon or using the twin, you know, hidden blades, you can actually use two swords.
Nice.
And it was a nice little feature. It makes fighting seem a little more crass. But the way that it was designed, it actually, you know, gives me a reason to think that it's possible, not likely, but possible, or at least probable, that they would that they could use that same sort of fighting mechanic in a future Assassin's Creed title if they wanted to expand towards using ninjas, for example.
Yes, yes. I think it's funny how it took them this long to say, like, oh, hey, you have another hand. You can use it to, you know, have another sword if you want to, you know?
Exactly. Speaking of more, Assassin's Creed 4 also implements the function for you to use not one, not two, but up to four guns, all, you know, within a relatively normal setting, of course.
Cool.
And of course that can be done by upgrades, because you start out with your two swords, you start out with two guns, and you get different holsters so that way you can upgrade how many you can carry. And it works out great in the long run, especially since there is an Abstergo challenge, where if you have the gilded guns, which is done by getting community challenges taken care of. If you have these four golden guns and you're able to kill, four people within, like, no more than, like, 5 seconds apart of each other.
Right, right.
So, like, if you're in contact and then you just do quick draw, boom, 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 and just knock them all out, then, one, you complete the challenge, and two, you have the ability to actually work with firing your weapon multiple times before having to worry about any sort of reload.
Nice. Wow. That's really cool.
It makes it seem, and I mean, like, well, realistically, carrying around four guns, I wouldn't doubt that that was common practice, mm-hmm. but from a realistic point, it makes sense. I mean, you know, you had to worry about getting the gunpowder just right, mm-hmm. you had to have it in the proper setting, load the bullets, everything along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that definitely is. It's really cool that they really implemented it into the game. Having a more kind of offensive character in Assassin's Creed than previous games. Now, one of the things that people really love in Assassin's Creed 3 was the boat sailing, or like, you know, the ship battles. And they took advantage of that in Assassin's Creed 4 and went into more in-depth and fleshed it out into more to that extent. Your opinion, do you think this is the best damn ship battle you ever played in a game?
Well, not only is it the best that I have experienced, but I also find that it's a very realistic way of looking at it. So, for example, if you have a little rinky-dink ship, it's not like, you know, you can just sail around people and be like, oh yeah, you know, I'll go ahead and, you know, knock you out after, like, 10 hours of shooting.
Right, right.
But no, the way that they have it set up is, where in Assassin's Creed 3, they introduced not only the ship itself, but the chain shot, which is a couple of cannonballs that are connected by a chain, mm-hmm. which can be used to destroy a person's sails.
Oh, wow.
They introduced that, and they introduced the swivel gun, which could be used to exploit an opponent's weak spot. Mm-hmm. So if, say, you've fired on them with broadside cannons, and there was an opening, it would prompt you with that, where you can hold down on the Y button, and as soon as the crosshairs match up, you let go, it would automatically go directly for that spot and do massive damage.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Now, Assassin's Creed 4 does that, does it a little better. They make the damaging dynamics seem more realistic. Mm. And not only that, but they also introduced the use of mortars, where, from a very far distance, say about a good 500 meters away or so, you can fire at an opponent, and they'll, take damage, and you can probably rack in maybe about two or three shots, before they're right up at you. Mm. And then, of course, the cannons themselves, they also have what's called a heavy shot, where if they're really close by, all you have to do is just pull the trigger, and instead of your normal cannonballs, they actually come out as flaming.
Awesome. Now, when you said that it takes like more of a realistic approach, does that mean like every time you fire a cannon, wherever it may be, does it take a good 30 to 15 seconds to reload, or... Like, how fast is
it? Well, Yeah, well, it does have a reload time to it, but it's nothing that's terribly inconveniencing. Now, realistically, if you had an extensive crew that was working at pulling the cannon back, loading in a new cannonball, getting, the gunpowder placed in there, the process itself, if done correctly, can take somewhere around, 10 seconds at most.
Okay, so it isn't too bad.
Yeah, and the thing is that in Assassin's Creed 4, the reload times that you'd have to wait is somewhere around, I'd say, 7 to 12 seconds at most.
Okay, that's cool. In regards to, I guess, okay, just out of curiosity, you played this Assassin's Creed on the PS4, right? Or I mean on the Xbox One.
Like, whoa, completely different console here.
But you played on Xbox One, right?
Yeah, I have Assassin's Creed 4 on Xbox One, and I have to say that it is a very beautiful. It's well, the way that it's displayed, it's done nice, crisp, clearly. It's just got a beautiful representation. And speaking of beauty, I'd like to point out kudos to Ubisoft for really, kicking the ass of all other water physics.
I saw some of the videos from it. It looks damn good. Even on YouTube on the videos, and it was still looks so good. I was wondering about, the presentation of the game on Xbox One, since this was a launch title for the system.
Yep, and the thing is that the way that well, just working with graphics in particular, of course, as with any game, if you are just like as close as you can possibly be to something, you may see a little bit of pixelation. I actually haven't come across that just yet in Assassin's Creed 4, so I think that it's one thing that they have touched up. As I mentioned before, water physics—they actually have that represented as something that's realistic. As you get in deeper waters, it does get darker. As it gets towards lighter and lighter waters, it will lighten up. And they've actually worked in the element of transparency to a T. So it doesn't seem like you're swimming through sludge like it was like in Assassin's Creed 3.
Right. I mean, it's safe to say that like this next gen gaming is only gonna look so much prettier.
It's only going to get better from here.
Oh yes, for sure, for sure. So I just out of curiosity, have you ran into like any bugs or anything to that nature, or like something that's kind of weird did like happen in the game?
Honestly, I haven't come across any bugs about the game itself, but I have noticed in one fight sequence when I was boarding a person's ship, which is another fun thing that you can do. And I'll talk into that just after this. But I noticed that when I was fighting someone, I was using my bare hands because, why would you need anything else? And of course, as I was fighting, for whatever reason, both Edward Kenway and I think it was a hunter that I was fighting against, we were both glitching at the same time where, like the commands were still reading as normal,
Right.
but just by any chance, have you heard of like the after image effect, right?
Yes.
So think like Dragon Ball era after image where they start moving really fast and then the images start separating. Yeah, I had something like that happen. It went on for about 2 seconds, but aside from that, no other bugs.
I see. Awesome.
And since I mentioned boarding, that was another fun thing that Assassin's Creed 4 did introduce to the gaming spectrum, is where instead of just blasting at ships, which was something that unfortunately you didn't really have free rein to do in Assassin's Creed 3. For AC3, it was pretty much where it was like you can only sail your ship on these naval contracts, whereas for AC4, that's your primary mode of getting around. And what you can do is board another person's ship after damaging them and basically knocking away their mast, and well, pretty much just getting them to the point where they would sink if you landed another hit on them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you'll bring him in with a grappling hook, and you actually have, and I like to consider it a bit of a mini game, but before you board a person or board a, a sector ship, what you can do is fire your swivel gun at the crew that's on the ship on the other side, and usually it'll give you a requirement, say, kill 5 men for a really small one, kill 10 for a hunter or a small ship or a medium class ship, 15 for a large one, and since my ship is currently not strong enough to take down a man of war, which, by the way, have you ever seen a man of war ship design?
No, actually, I have. I can look at that right now, actually. Man
Okay,
of
well,
War.
like this. You know how Titanfall is in regards to the mechs in comparison to the to the pilots? Think that sort of comparison between your ship and a man of war.
Oh my, yeah. I'm seeing pictures of it right now.
Yeah, it's something along that, those lines for a comparison.
Oh man, that's pretty awesome.
And the thing is that if you even try to go after them, if you're unprepared, they will sink you so fast.
Oh man, I can only imagine. That ship is packing.
Yeah, and the thing is like in order for you to board that, you would basically need like a fully upgraded crew, because you have limits to how many people you can carry on your ship, until you upgrade them. You need to have basically a full cast of crew members, and you have everything fully upgraded to even put a dent in it. I tried going up against a man of war earlier, and I have like intermediate stuff, like somewhere that's just in the middle for the cannons, the armor, everything like that, because I wanted to save my reales to complete an Abstergo challenge for having 100,000 on your person. And so here I am, I have like 70 grand that I'm just holding on to. I'm just like, oh, I really want to upgrade, but no, I want to get this thing. And what sucks is I figured, I'll go ahead and attack this man of war. It's no big deal. It sinks me in 2 hits. I'm not exaggerating. It just the first one, it took out about 3/4 of my health, and then after that, it did a follow-up shot, and I was just down.
The power so much. Wow.
And before I forget, for other nautical nonsense, they added two other things. One, which was harpooning,
Oh,
and
cool.
two, and the second one was using a diving bell.
Huh.
Have you ever heard of a diving bell?
No, I haven't.
So, well, like how people would go scuba diving, they'd have an air tank and everything like that.
I'm thinking about that thing that that drops down to keep the ship steady in one place.
You're thinking of an anchor,
Oh yeah, oops, my
but
bad.
it's all right. So a diving bell was a primitive device that would, and again, I'm using that in comparison to today's standards. The design of it, of course, is far from it, but it was underdeveloped, so to speak.
I see. Okay.
But the way that the diving bell works is that they have this big bell-shaped container of air. And it has weights on the bottom of it. And what they would do is have that carried out over to over the ocean surface, and then they just drop it, and it would be connected by a chain. And it has this air held in that air pocket. And typically, a diving bell would be filled with the construction would be iron or steel, whatever happened to be nice and dense. So that way it could hold down that nice pocket of oxygen. And some designs even included a wooden floor, or well, at least a wooden ring. There would still be that opening at the bottom, so that way you could easily dip your hands into the water. And that was for the more luxurious ones, where people would use that as a way to go underwater and get to take a look at what underwater wildlife looked like.
Right.
And in Assassin's Creed 4, they use that to where you can search for sunken treasure. Now, it sounds great in practice, but or rather, it sounds great just by me telling you, but actually going through with it is, it can be really stressful because I did not realize just how vicious the sea could be. And the reason why I bring that up is because, much like, you know, for, sorry, I'm starting to stammer over my words here.
Oh, no, that's cool.
So much like how when you notice a guard is about to see you, they have that little reticle that shows up over their head.
Right.
That's, you know, goes from yellow to red.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, they have that sort of thing implemented only with great white sharks.
Huh.
And here's the problem. You can't kill them underwater.
That sucks.
Yeah, so what happens is that if you're looking at, you know, going around from, you know, doing your little diving mission, and you come across some great white sharks, there are some ways that you can hide yourself, which is either A, working with a part of a sunken ship, or B, hiding in seaweed.
Hmm.
And they work much like the stealth covers that you would find, or, of course, just bringing yourself out of the line of vision.
Huh.
And, I mean, I have to say, it really got my heart pounding when I realized, oh, wait a second, there were sharks. They're going to eat me.
Yes, there were still sharks in that time of history.
Well, of course, dingus. But it's just the idea that, you know, here they are, they're going to come after you. And like, if you are anywhere remotely in their line of vision, they don't even have to see you. They'll smell you.
Wow.
If you're anywhere remotely nearby, they will find you, and they will kill you.
I like what you did there.
And, of course, it's, and the thing is, it's not just the fact that they have sharks, but they also have jellyfish, sea urchins, and moray eels that show up as all potential, you know, things that can kill you.
Mm-hmm.
For example, a moray eel, it'll kill you in two hits.
Wow.
Great white shark, it'll just take, you know, it'll just sort of ram into you for the first, you know, bit until you start getting into the red, and then it'll, you know, go for the killing blow.
Wow.
And then, of course, sea urchins and jellyfish are just the environmental hazards that if you run into them, you know, either because you're not swimming in the right angle, and believe me when I say it, they make it difficult. If there's a jellyfish, there's typically a swarm of them, and you have to sort of weave yourself in and out to not get hit.
Right, right.
Whereas urchins, they basically damage you if you get too close to their habitat, which is typically a rock face or a part of a ship. But the dynamics around that, I mean, it's a really nice design. It actually gets to show that not only can you actually swim, something you couldn't do in Assassin's Creed 1, but you can dive and, you know, interact with nautical life.
That's really cool.
And then... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go on. Finish your thought.
Oh, I was going to say, and of course, if, you know, the underwater dynamics aren't exactly your thing, then, of course, there's the harpooning, which I mentioned before. And, in fact, I remember when it first, when word first broke about it, I posted on our Facebook page that PETA got all up in arms about it.
Of course. Of course they would.
Yeah, it's like, oh, what did the whales ever do to you? Like, well, you know, we're out on the sea. We need to eat. So
these were different. And, these were different times back then. You understand.
And the thing is that you can do every. You can hunt a humpback whale, killer whale, bull shark, hammerhead, and of course you can pull. Oh, God, why am I not able to remember his name? was it, I'm thinking, is it Ishmael?
Oh, you're talking about the...
Oh, no, Captain Ahab. Captain Ahab,
oh, okay.
My bad.
Gotcha, all right.
You know, going after Moby Dick and the white whale.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Moby Dick was a white whale, but...
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can actually hunt for them.
Nice. That's really cool. I didn't know they had that in the game. Wow.
And the thing is that you're on this little rowboat, and you have a stock of harpoons. And while I personally haven't gotten to the point where, you know, I've run out of them, like, they start you off, I believe, with 15, and then it goes up to 30, and then I think it goes up to 40 from there.
Mm.
So, I mean, they do try to be pretty accommodating in regards to that, especially if you're trying to tackle a white whale.
Right.
Because that thing, it will damage you regardless of how good you are or, you know, however you handle it.
Mm.
But, although I still laugh every time I hunt a humpback whale and I see the crew and they're lifting it up the ship and you just see this giant whale just, you know, covered in blood.
That must be an awesome sight, but yet at the same time so grotesque.
And the thing is that you can actually use the materials that you collect not just from them but from other local wildlife such as howler monkeys, jaguars, and, you know, creatures of the like to, you know, make your upgrades.
Wow.
And of course, that should go without saying that Assassin's Creed 3, they introduced the hunting and skinning elements of the game,
mm-hmm.
where you could go after animals. But now what they did is that if you were coming across an enemy such as a bobcat or a jaguar or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
it was always the same scripted thing. Whereas with AC4, I mean, like, sure, it's going to be the same general idea that, you know, they're coming after you, you have to, you know, hit a button. They actually change it instead of it being B and then, you know, you mash X for a little bit. In this case, I've had it where it would start out as, like, I needed to hit Y and then mash B or, you know, hit A or tap X. You know, like, they actually throw in some button diversity to, you know, make the fighting a little more dynamic.
Interesting. Assassin's Creed 4 is such a huge game on itself. It is linear in some aspects. But as far as, did you try around with any of the side missions or the collectibles in the game?
Yes. And now, I'm not sure if you remember or not, but usually towards the end of the game, they have you do this particular challenge in order to get this ultimate armor.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least one that's, you know, just looks, happens to look really great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in Assassin's Creed 4, not only, you know, like, for the previous Assassin's Creed games, you could just basically change the colors of your outfit.
Mm-hmm.
In AC4, they give you whole different outfits. So, like, for example, you start off with assassin garb that you basically ripped off of an assassin that you killed.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not spoiling anything. This happens within the first, like, half hour of the game.
Right, right.
So you do start out with that, but there's also, like, when you're doing the diving bell or harpooning challenges, then, you know, you're just brought down to a pair of what looks to be, like, harem pants and a sash.
Hmm.
And, which actually, before I continue with the other outfits, I also want to point out that in Assassin's Creed 4, Edward Kenway not only has tattoos, but he's got a load of them.
The question is, where does he store all these costumes at?
Interestingly enough, all on one mannequin. And it's, I'm not even joking with that. If you go inside the ship, you select the glowing mannequin, and you can pick any one of your outfits from there.
Interesting.
And then, of course, the way that they have it is, since I've been playing Assassin's Creed on my Xbox ever since AC1 came out, you know, of course, I do have a Uplay account, and since it notices that I have beaten every single one of the games, it actually gave me the costumes for Altair, Ezio, and Connor.
Nice. Awesome.
And not only that, but they also throw in other costumes like, you know, Captain Morgan, you know, one on the rum bottles.
Yes, indeed. I'm very good friends with him. Him and I, we're good buddies.
Oh, for me, I'm more a fan of Jack Daniels myself, but you actually do get a more stylized version of Captain Morgan's outfits, complete with
so
the
cool.
hat with the little plumage and everything.
Nice.
And based on your hunting challenges, they'll give you access to a whaler outfit, a hunter outfit, and about two other ones that you get just from skinning particular animals.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you can buy different outfits that are just tailored to your own personal interests. None of them have any extra benefits. It's all just how you want to look.
Right, right. Wow, okay. That's pretty awesome. I like that. I like how they go in that territory with the outfit to some of the pirates. That's pretty cool.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, finish your thought.
Oh, I was going to say, they also have a few other ones. Like, for example, there is this one which is called the pirate outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks, and I just want to clarify that for the most part, all the outfits do generally look the same, except for ones you have to complete in challenges. But for all of the ones that you can buy, they all sort of look the same, except for the pirate one, which has part of a tattered Jolly Roger over the right shoulder. But they're all sort of stylized to kind of represent the assassin armor and yet still look like, for the most part, like colonial garb.
Right, right. Okay.
And one other, and one last, two last outfits. I promise I'll be done with this topic. there's at one point in the game where you have to take down a particular Templar. And when you do, you gain access to this whole island, and you basically own it.
Mm-hmm.
Inside the manor of that particular island, there happens to be a set of Templar armor, where it doesn't have a hood, but you the design is supposed to be more of like a Templar. It's a long overcoat. Your head is exposed. But you have a really high collar that goes up to that to cover about half of your ear.
Mm-hmm.
And like the design for it, it looks really great and something that I honestly wish I had for winter. It's starting to get cold, man.
Oh, man, you would not believe the cold I've been through today. That's a story for another day. that's cool. That's pretty awesome. Go ahead.
Sorry. This was just the last one.
Mm-hmm.
They've also introduced Mayan challenges, where it's pretty much just match up, circles and lines with this particular setup.
Mm-hmm.
And after collecting all of these stones that you get from it, it gives you access to what's labeled as Mayan armor, where you basically look like a Mayan warrior, and it looks really nice, but I still haven't gotten all the stones to get it yet, though.
Hmm. Okay. The one thing that's interesting in what they do, it feels like Ubisoft is teasing what possibly could be the next game since it's going to take place in, especially with these costumes and things they kind of put out there. How much time did it take you to beat the game?
Shoot, honestly, I've been playing it typically after I get off of work at midnight till about 5,
mm-hmm.
and I've been playing it ever since Xbox One came out. I'm still only about 60% into it.
Wow, crazy. So,
and I mean, and here's the thing, I'm a perfectionist too, and I've been trying to do everything at 100%.
Ah, I see.
But that doesn't change the fact that I've spent probably around... I actually venture close to 80 hours into the game so far, and I'm still like just scraping around halfway past it.
Jesus, yeah. Assassin's Creed has always been in each game, like there's always been a good amount of stuff to do, whether it be side missions, main missions, or collectibles. If I recall, I'm trying to remember, like in the past Assassin's Creed games, like, it didn't leave around, like, if you just went straight through the story, no side missions or anything. I think it was, like, around, like, 10 to 15 hours? Maybe 20, I think. I'm not quite sure. But,
Admissions?
No, just,
Oh, you mean, like, for the main gameplay?
Yeah, sorry, no, yeah, just going through the game about doing any of the missions, just the main missions and plowing through the game. But going through 100% is, one, it is a remarkable feat, and second, you have a lot of patience for this game. Not to say this game is bad or anything like that, but it is interesting to hear that. So, wow, 80 hours, 60%. So I'm assuming at this rate, you probably will be totaling around, possibly over 100 hours on this game.
Oh yeah, easily. I'd say that by the time I'm done, I'll probably have spent about 140 hours plus into it.
Nice.
And it's because there's just so much content out there, and it doesn't feel like they're forcing you with all this content. It's like you can do it if you want. It's just, you know, take some time, enjoy some sea shanties, and, you know, just play the game at your own pace.
Okay.
Which I'd also like to point out is another contrast from Assassin's Creed 3. I know, I can't stop talking about this game. But again, with Assassin's Creed 3, it was like you darted from mission to mission to mission, and then the side missions that they had were, you know, they were just sort of thrown in there.
Right.
With Assassin's Creed 4, I'd honestly say that its design, I mean, you do have to do some side missions in order to, fully advance, you have to do some side missions in order to actually, like, get to where you need to be. Because it'll even tell you, like, for some parts in the main story, it says, you need to upgrade your ship before you do this. Like, it's going to flat out tell you, if you don't do this, you're going to die. Just don't.
Right, right.
And I've had that warning come up for me a couple times, and I'm like, oh, wow, I'm surprised. You actually sort of care about my welfare.
You care about my well-being.
And the thing is that, like, its overall design, like, you do have to do, some boarding and all this other stuff to, upgrade your ship. But when it comes down to it, like I said, none of it ever feels forced. And, it's all very fluid. Like, it all sort of runs together, and there's honestly not a single thing that I complain about in Assassin's Creed 4.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, I know you're not finished with the game yet or the story, but so far in the game, how are you liking the story compared to the other Assassin's Creed game you played in the past?
Compared to the others, I actually say I'm pretty much in love with this so far. Now, the way that they have it is, now I'm not sure if this term has come up before, but you basically play a screw-up hero. And are you familiar with the terminology by any chance?
No, but please explain for those in the people who are listening to his podcast. Anyways.
Okay, well, I think a better term would be a flawed hero, where
okay.
Like right from the get-go, like, you're not that great.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it pretty much, like, starts off the game by pretty much showing that you've had marital problems. And it's showing you, like, with your wife and it does show up in little bits and pieces, but, like, there's, this argument that you're having with her, and, it's not really much of a spoiler, but she ends up walking out on you. Again, I haven't... this is well before the events of the actual game itself, so, just throwing that out there. But the thing is that it does help provide a better backdrop to what's going on. And since, as I mentioned, I'm only about 60, maybe 65% into the game, I honestly haven't seen, like, what other cutscenes show up about it, or if there's any resolution to their personal conflict.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I have to say that, like, you start off, you tell your wife that you're going to be privateering, which, you know, well, and the thing is that, like, he had intended to, you know, actually work with, work with the military. And, you know, of course, that didn't pan out, and then he realized, eh, I like being a pirate better.
Who doesn't?
And, and again, I'm not sure if that does change over the course of the different cutscenes, but from the very beginning, you're a pirate. You take the helm of the ship that you're trying to work with. You know, gets blown to smithereens, and you go after and kill an assassin, and then you steal his clothes and then pretend to be him. Then, very shortly, story-wise, you notice that he has a map and this little crystal cube on his person, and he sells it off to the Templars, not knowing that, you know, like that it actually holds some sense of gravity. And then afterwards, and in fact, with the assassin missions that show up afterwards, where you have to protect fellow assassins, it pretty much all starts with, yeah, so I might have probably gotten these guys to try and kill you. It's much like that. It's much like the call that you might expect in the morning. It's like, yeah, you might want to get tested.
Nice.
It's presented kind of like in that same vein, and I couldn't help but laugh at it when I had that show up.
Nice. Awesome.
But you know, like even there were multiple points in the story where not just the fellow assassins, but even your own crew points out, is like, Captain, do you know what you're doing? Are you sure you're not just effed in the head? And like, and they just outwardly point this out to you, saying that, you know, you're not a great guy, but at the same time, you're not like terrible either. And to put that into contrast, you even get to go and work with the likes of James Kidd and Captain Blackbeard, Edward Thatch. So yeah, I'll repeat. You're friends with Blackbeard.
Yeah,
Okay, that's a selling point in itself.
that's a mighty awesome friend to have in any circumstance.
And the thing is, just like watching Thatch's developments as Blackbeard, I mean, it was just an absolute treat to the eyes to watch him just, you know, go into this like intentionally crazy character. And in fact, to quote one of the to quote a soldier, he said that at one point his crew watched him eat sulfur and iron just to scare them.
Nice.
And oh yeah, and then he also lined his hat with like cannon fuses too. So like he would actually have like these flaming fuses just sticking right out of his hat, and they'd be like right over his face too.
Wow, that's awesome. I saw the trailer when I popped on, but whoa, it was so badass.
But yeah, the one where it has Blackbeard explaining who Edward Kenway was.
That was pretty cool.
And the thing is, they actually use that for the opening sequence of the game. Like, if you know, you don't hit start, and then it gives you that little video. We'll actually like play that same trailer, and you know, just give you a scope as to how powerful the machine is, what it's able of processing, and everything like that. All while not using gaming footage.
Wow, crazy. It is surprising how far we came, just in terms of graphics and just the sheer amount of just things you've been able to produce in the last couple of years. No, to say, from talking to you this entire time, I believe that you are enjoying Assassin's Creed 4. Am I correct?
Oh God, I'm loving it. And in fact, I've actually had my gramps yelling at me a few times, saying, "Chris, it's 6 in the morning. Go to sleep."
was your explanation?
"Sorry, I didn't notice the time." And the thing is I really don't. It's like once I start playing it, it's just so encompassing and just so absorbing that time loses all sense of meaning when you're playing.
You're in the animus, as it were.
Yes, and that's one other thing I do want to point out. Now, for our listeners out there, who many of whom I'm sure have already beaten Assassin's Creed 3, Anthony, have you?
No, but I do know what happens at the end. And for people who haven't, this is spoiler warning. Skip ahead about, 5 minutes, maybe?
About 5 minutes, that sounds fair.
Okay, skip ahead 5 minutes if you don't want to hear the ending of Assassin's Creed 3. You've been warned. All right, go ahead, Chris. Take it away.
Okay, so but basically, at the end of Assassin's Creed 3, and again, this is all played chronologically, mind you, so Assassin's Creed 4 picks up right after. Assassin's Creed 3 ends where Desmond Miles basically gives up his life in order to prevent an apocalypse that was made by the first civilization. And the thing that really got my goat was that they didn't really go into the whole concept of the first civilization until the very end of Assassin's Creed Revelations. Or, yeah, Revelations was after Brotherhood, so yeah. And I don't know, and to some degree, I felt that it was kind of an asshole. But at the same time, I figured, well, you had all these things that were introduced from the very beginning. It sort of makes sense. It just more info ahead of time would have been appreciated. Oh, sorry. And I just meant to continue that with Assassin's Creed 3. Desmond basically sacrifices his life in order to save the lives of everyone else, and it's able to, postpone an apocalypse where I believe it was Juno. She decides, or rather, explains to Desmond, his father, and everyone else who was nearby, which I think was Sean and Rebecca, who do make, and it happens early in game, but they do make a reappearance in Assassin's Creed 4.
Interesting.
But for those that were involved, they get to see, like the horror of what could have happened, or rather what could happen. And Desmond basically, thwarts a plan to, basically, which originally intended to have the world wiped clean, which would end up starting a new cycle of, basically everything that's already happened in society.
Interesting. Overall, eventually, there's the one scenario I do want to ha have happen one day, whenever that last Assassin's Creed game will ever be, where they fight in the future, like in that setting at the very end, which we're all waiting for. But aside from that, though, overall, your thoughts on Assassin's Creed 4 so far, knowing that you are still playing the game, but still, overall, how do you feel about everything you've played so far about the game?
Well, like I said, I have no complaints about it whatsoever. It's a very beautiful and well-developed game, and I have to say, Ubisoft, you've done a fantastic job. Plus, I love the little Easter eggs that they've thrown in there as well. But I'll get to that towards the end of the podcast.
Nice.
And I was just going to say that Assassin's Creed 3, while it was a good footing for everything that was set up here, De they definitely did have a rocky start regarding that, and not even the DLC for The Tyranny of King Washington was able to. I mean, like, it was still a fantastic game, don't get me wrong. It's just that the design of it really could have been polished a little further. And then Assassin's Creed 4 basically takes Assassin's Creed 3, takes everything that was bad about it, and improves upon it and then excels in everything else.
Nice. The other thing I wanted to ask was, how was the music of the game? How was the score of the game so far?
Honestly, Assassin's Creed 4, I mean, aside from the fact that, you know, it does definitely take a little bit of extra work to, you know, really work with everything that the game throws at you. I mean, like, and that's actually one, it's a pro and con for me that they actually make you put in effort to not only go through the game, but to do it well. So, in that respect, I'd have to say that I give Assassin's Creed 4, Black Flag, a 10 out of 10.
Wow. Very, very high praise.
Yeah, and then since I didn't get to review it before, I'd also like to throw in that Assassin's Creed 3, it did a good job at setting a template for Assassin's Creed 4. And there was a lot of polishing that it had to do, but overall, it wasn't half bad. I'd say 7.5 out of 10.
Mm, okay. Cool. I believe that many will agree with you. Assassin's Creed 4 has always been a good staple of Ubisoft and always been a good game 90% of the time. but that's great. Good to hear. The Easter eggs you were talking about, if you could talk about them, but like, try not to spoil it, if that's possible.
Okay, well, I'll only talk about three things. They've thrown in quite a few more, but I'll just throw in my three favorites.
Okay.
The first one, at the very beginning of the game, you get introduced as an Abstergo employee. First thing that they, and while they don't state it, they say that you're in Abstergo Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
I shit you not. They basically plopped you right in the middle of Ubisoft.
What?
Yeah, I'm not even joking. The way that they have it set up, and of course, while the offices don't match, they have like little bits and pieces from the previous Assassin's Creed game showing up on the monitors.
Oh, wow.
And like, they're good for viewing at any point, but as you're being like introduced to your environment around you, they flat out say, like, oh yeah, and this was Abstergo Entertainment's latest creation before the project that you're working on right now. And it's what we call Liberation. And you actually get to see the main character from Assassin's Creed Liberation, which I have not yet had the chance to play since I don't have a Vita.
Mm-hmm.
But not only that, but they also like show bits and pieces from how gameplay was designed and everything.
That's freaking cool. Wow. That's awesome.
And here's where it gets better. For that same bit, you're given this little tablet, and you can take a look at your like welcome to Abstergo thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you scroll down partway into it, they have a timeline for what they've done.
Wow.
And while it isn't explicitly stated, like it shows that, you know, they've had starts like back in the 1800s or something like that. But the fun part is when it gets to the mid to late 2000s, where they say the anima system has been introduced to work with genetic memory. And they basically mention Assassin's Creed 1, 2, Brotherhood, and Revelations. All of that inside. Oh, and 3. All of that within their little brochure.
That is pretty awesome. That's really cool. Wow.
So that's, I'm going to go ahead and say that's all encompassed of Easter Egg 1.
Hmm.
Easter Egg 2. At some point, like, you'll notice that, you know, like, whales and dolphins and stuff like that, they're going to be jumping off, you know, around the side of the ship and everything.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, I can't remember where it was, but you'll see a giant squid and a white whale fighting each other. That's another tip of the hat to old Moby Dick.
Nice.
So that was a nice little fun addition that they've had in there. And the last Easter egg that I want to work with is, it's a little tough to, you know, peg this exactly. Oh, why not? So when you're working in Abstergo Entertainment, they give you access to basically hack other people's computers and get more information as to what happened to Desmond and get more information as to, you know, what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
At least from the espionage side of things.
Right, right.
And I'm not going into detail as to what that information includes, but what I want to throw in is that for one of the hacking things that they have, they're all designed like games, mind you. They basically threw in Frogger.
Awesome.
I laughed my arse off. I see that in, you're this little white dot, and then you have to navigate between little like glowing red lines with spaces in between. Yeah, you're playing Frogger to hack other people's computers.
Wow, if only it was that easy.
Oh, but I have to say, I love every single minute of it. I love the fact that what looked like they were just like putting an end to a series, they got it not only up and running, but they also increased the engine that it's working off of. So let's say that, you know, you're working off of a V6, okay, so you're driving a car,
mm-hmm.
you're working off of a V6 yeah. motor. It's powerful, but not that powerful.
Mm-hmm.
They kick it with a V8.
Nice.
And it's so much fun. The dynamics that they have on there, just everything that they've thrown in, it is the best fun that I've ever had playing one of the Assassin's Creed games in my entire life.
Awesome. That is great to hear. Great to hear you enjoy the game, and great to hear you're still playing the game. Awesome. Well, Chris, I would like to thank you so much for joining me for this podcast on all about Assassin's Creed 4 and a bit of 3, as I burp into the mic. Where can they find you on the internet?
So far, I'm just keeping my priorities straight. I'm working with just Mission Start Podcast. Hopefully, you'll be seeing more content from me in the form of these podcasts as I'm in the process of building a computer so I can get back to writing.
I'm with you, man. My computer died on me recently too, so I'm waiting for my parts to come and fix this.
Thankfully, yours is something that can easily be fixed. I was working off of a laptop and it gave me the white screen of death.
Oh,
it's not even gonna, it won't even plug into a TV.
That sucks.
I know.
Mm-hmm. And you can find everything that we do on our website, including this podcast, on our website, as Chris said, at missionstartpodcast.com. Do check out our new reviews, our new podcasts that we have every week, whether it be the Conover, Mission Start Podcast, or the Golden 20s. And please do check out all our awesome stuff in the coming years. I also like to, forgot to say this before I did all that stuff. You can also follow me on Twitter at TheFrictedNaruto. In my shenanigans, I usually go on there for. But yeah, please do check us out. Anywho, again, Chris, thank you so much for joining me for this podcast to talk about everything that's happened between 3 and 4.
Always a pleasure.
And with that, we will see you all next time.